You're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio, as I am every month, with Suzanne Bjornsson from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Hi. Thanks for being here, you guys. So every month we come to you with a show about senior issues. And today our topic is long-term care options. So when someone gets to the point in their life where they need a little extra help with what they're doing as they age, what are your options? And there are numerous options other than going into a facility, but some facilities are a great choice for people. So we're going to talk about all those options and what people can do. So why don't we start, Suzanne, why don't we start with you about what are the options people have if they reach a point where they just can't really quite handle it all themselves anymore?
Well, there's several different options. We like to encourage people to start researching it before that happens, when it comes to a point where they need to make a choice right away, because it's really a good idea to research what your options are. So, listening to the station, there you go. We have assisted living facilities that are in this county, and we have memory care options. There's a couple here. There are adult foster homes. But then if they are wanting to stay in their home, there is the option of hiring caregivers. So,
okay, well, let's talk about, for people who may be listening to us for the first time or not, just not real well versed in this, but facing it now. What is assisted living? What does that mean?
An assisted living is a care facility that people would have their own private rooms. And they usually have like a small kitchenette, their own private bathroom. They've come a long way. I think a lot of people, unfortunately, have this mindset that an assisted living is like a 1980s nursing home. And they're nothing like that. They you can still live independently. But then if you need help, if you have more higher needs, you can get that as well. So some people live in those facilities because they like the camaraderie and being around other people and participate in their activities. Usually assisted livings has activities throughout the month that come into the facility, or they can drive them to like the store each week, and they'll do different activities like that. They usually have a nice community area where they have their meals. However, if you don't want to have your meals with the community, you can bring it back to your room. If you want to be completely independent in an assisted living, like you're living in an apartment, you can do that. You can come and go as you please. I think a lot of people feel like once I go in there, my life's over. I can't leave the facility. That's not true. You've got as much freedom as you need or you want. And then you also have the peace of mind, as there are professionals there, caregivers there to help you if there is an emergency, if you have a fall. They usually have some sort of a call system, so you can call somebody if you need them. If you want to remain private in your room, you can have people not really even bother you. So there's just people there. There's extra wraparound services to help support you while you age.
I know a friend of mine's mom is in one of those assisted living places in Seaside, and it's really nice. I mean, she has what amounts to a really nice apartment with a kitchen and a couple of bedrooms, and she lives there, but she has the option to go to a communal meal thing on site. And then if she does need anything, I think somebody cleans her apartment for her. And so it just is, but she always knows that if something goes wrong, she can just easily get somebody to come over and help her.
Yeah, we do have a community in this area that has more of an apartment style, and it's that would be considered more of independent living.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have an assisted living building as well
on site, and
and then some of them have then there's the assisted livings that are actual assisted living apartments where you get a little bit more of that help, and then they'll have a memory care, and the memory care options are quite nice, and they monitor who would be appropriate to move into a memory care. Not everybody's appropriate. Just because you have dementia doesn't mean you need to be in a memory care unit. It would have to be at a certain point where you would be appropriate for something like that. And there's professionals there that monitor all that as well.
And so is that sort of a doctor's determination whether someone can go into it? Isn't, okay.
No, not necessarily. Okay. It can be the resident, consumer, whoever they are in this particular scenario. It could be their choice. Generally, you would have a dementia diagnosis, though, but a doctor wouldn't say you need to be in this. Sometimes doctors would suggest it. That definitely could happen. Sometimes it's family members. But generally, people don't choose, oh, I want to live in a memory care. Usually it's to the point where their dementia is needing additional assistance and the family members going, we need help. And then the facilities also doing their own assessment to make sure that they are appropriate. So we're not just going to have anybody, not anybody can just go in there.
So with memory care, that's a whole different level of supported living, I guess you would say, more than assisted living. So people are, it sounds like a lot of, to protect people from themselves maybe a little bit because they can't quite think things through the way they once did.
Yeah, for the care and safety. If they are somebody, if they're living in assisted living with dementia and they can live successfully and they don't need as many regular checks, or if they aren't, a term is also called eloping a lot, if they're not leaving the facility grounds and not knowing how to get back. Some people can live with dementia just fine in the assisted living. Other people, if they're starting to have maybe higher behaviors that's affecting the community, then they need to look at that. And those are going to be the factors. They're going to be looking at their behavior. Are they eloping? Are they more of a risk to themselves? Do we need to be checking on them constantly? Those are scenarios of where they would be a better fit for a memory care. Because the whole thing is a facility, when they are looking at bringing somebody into their community, they're not just going to bring anybody in. They do their own assessment because they need to make sure people are a good fit. And you need to make sure it's a good fit for yourself, too. So that's why it's important to shop around. Shop around, take a look at assisted livings because they all have different feels to them. And some of them might feel more home to you than others. And then with that, look at a foster home and see, you know, do I feel more comfortable in a foster home or do I feel more comfortable in assisted living?
Well, I know before we go on to foster homes, I just want to mention an article that I read, which is very interesting because apparently as we age, there's so many baby boomers in this generation who are aging that memory care issues are really a big deal. And there was a really interesting article, I can't remember, maybe in The Guardian or something, about a woman who developed early onset Alzheimer's while she was still working. And she went to her employer and said, here's my medical situation. And her employer, instead of saying, well, you're out of here, medical retirement, said, well, how can we work with you? And they changed the way she did her job so that she would have more time to think things through because she was able to function. It just took her longer to do things that she had previously done. And so they set up a system where she just could work in different ways of supporting her so that she could continue to work. And I thought, what a cool thing.
That's incredible.
To not just say, well, you're out of here, we can't trust you anymore to make the right decisions. And she, maybe, I think it might have been the New York Times. Anyway, I'm sure you could Google it and find it. But she was saying that she was so appreciative of her employer, but she thought it was maybe kind of a bellwether of society that valuable mm-hmm. people in organizations don't necessarily need to be jettisoned because they're starting to have some cognitive issues. And mm-hmm. so her employer was really supportive of her. And I thought, what a neat thing.
That's great. Yeah, because people still have value in our society. You know, it's just because you have that dementia. I think that's what scares people, too, about feeling embarrassed when they have a dementia diagnosis. There's so many different levels of where you're at. Will it progress to end stage Alzheimer's or not? You know, or is it going to be this little forgetfulness? And, you know, we don't always know. We don't always have the answers of where you're going to be. And so it's really important for people to, once you start discovering that you're maybe having a memory loss. Some people may not even realize that they are, though. But some people are, and they keep it a secret. But it's really important to come forward to maybe people that you trust, mm-hmm. feel comfortable with, and then, you know, seek out medical attention because sometimes there's different interventions and things that can help you with your memory before it goes, you know, too far. So that's why it's, you know, don't hide it away because then you may not get the tips and tricks or, you know, maybe the dietary things that you need to help support your diagnosis.
Yeah. Well, you know, from what I know about the difference between memory loss and dementia, I see it in my dad, who I think has memory loss but not dementia. I mean, he can't remember, you know, he'll ask me the same question 5 minutes later that he just asked me about something simple like what day is it or, but on the other hand, he can think. I mean, he can have a conversation. His long-term memory is great. Mm-hmm. He remembers stuff from 50 years ago. And he can also think and talk and make decisions. It's just that when it comes to remembering, what did I have for breakfast, or what did we just do, or where were we, like driving in the car, what town did we just pass through? Mm-hmm. He just has a lot of trouble with that.
Normal signs of aging, maybe.
But he's better at some things than others, and better on some days than others. So it's really interesting.
Well, there's a lot of differences between certain types of dementia and Alzheimer's. I mean, people kind of lump them together.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that determines Alzheimer's is that it's insidious. I mean, it keeps going and going. But you were talking about he may not remember where he put his shoes that morning, which I can relate to some mornings.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, if he can still do sequential things,
yes,
and he can still, you were talking about, he can still think clearly, he can still do these different steps, different things, you know, then it's probably not Alzheimer's. Or if it is, it's very early.
Mm, okay.
Because they begin to lose the ability to do sequential events,
balance
the checkbook,
to
remember the rules of a card game, cribbage they've played all their lives, or something like that.
Okay.
So those type of things begin to go. And, of course, Alzheimer's at its end, the body, I refer to it as the body forgetting how to function, because the body starts shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
People will say, well, they don't remember how to swallow. Well, the muscle memory's going. I mean, all these things happen because Alzheimer's is terminal. So the dementias are, you know, can be a lot of things until you get to that point. And one of the good things about the memory care units that Suzanne was talking about is a lot of those are involved with different facilities and communities, and they're kind of progressive. She was talking about you can be in a cottage in one of these communities and live independently. You're just like renting a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe on that same campus or close nearby is an assisted living. Okay, now you need a little help sometimes. And if you're in the assisted living, there's different levels of care that they can provide. Plus, they can be monitoring and saying, you know, so-and-so seems to be having some cognitive issues now. They're forgetting where they are. They're exit-seeking. They're always trying to get out. Well, then you can start looking at memory care and that type of thing. Plus, if there's more, and there's nurses there, too. Of course, if it gets into skilled nursing care that you need, then you're talking about a nursing facility.
Right.
But it's a progressive thing, and you were talking about the boomers getting older. You're seeing, again, on the East Coast, I often read New Old Age in the New York Times.
Wow.
And they have communities on the East Coast that are like that, that have different stages that you might find yourself in, but you're in and around the same group of people. And so that really helps, and it helps with the transition that that's still familiar faces, even if you can't quite connect them. So it isn't something that needs to be, well, if they can't go there, they have to go to a nursing facility. There's all kinds of things in between there. And some people will go to an assisted living. They might go up to a level 2 of care or something, and they're fine there until they pass or they move in with their kids or do whatever they want to do. And some will be there just for a brief time, especially if they have something that's kind of debilitating. So there's all kinds of different things in there and different options.
Well, Doug, why don't I ask you about this? We were sort of segueing into the adult foster care home facility, which is a different kind of a thing. It's people being housed in someone's home. So can you talk about that a little bit? What is that?
In Washington, it's referred to as adult family homes. Same initials.
And it's foster home in Oregon, though?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And years ago, it was foster home in Washington, too. I think a family home is more descriptive in the sense that you are moving into that family's home.
Sure.
And they can take no more than 6 people at a time. Frequently, you share a bedroom because this is a family home, remember. It's not a, you know, a big plaza. It's not a big facility. And you'll have common rooms for recreation and activities and TV room and that kind of stuff. You've got care 24/7. Someone is always in the house. Nurse delegation can be brought in if there's nursing needs. And some people say, I don't want to be alone, but I don't want to be around 40 other people, you know, or whatever is in an assisted living. And it is. It's more of a home atmosphere because it is someone's home. So some people like that, especially in our rural communities. When I was a case manager, I had clients that say, well, I want to go to this adult family home because my friend Judy's there, you know, and so if I can't stay at home, I want to go, you know. So, it, you know, there's a lot of options there, but they're much smaller more individualized attention because it is smaller. And generally, it's a higher need, people that have higher needs than going into assisted living.
So are the people who run those homes, are they required to have special training in order to
training and licensing.
And licensing, yes. Yeah. Okay. So then that, I know I have an elderly relative on the East Coast who is in one of those homes, and had an uncle who was in one of those homes until he passed away, and he was really happy there. I mean, they're both doing well in that because it's sort of a lower key environment. That's
yes.
like
mm-hmm.
it's a residential home, really, that somebody mm-hmm. got permission to right. convert
yeah,
into.
Yeah, you're not walking into something that even the adult family homes, and we've got some really nice ones on both sides of the river, and they're comfortable, but it still feels like a facility.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right, it's, sure.
Because they have to. I mean,
they have
you know,
to.
They have
yeah.
so many people there and different things, and so you've got these long hallways and different things like that, and,
yeah.
and the adult family homes are more cozy.
Well, so we've talked about, well, first of all, it's about halfway through the show. I just want to remind you that you're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with Suzanne Bjornsson from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Every month we come to you on the show to talk about some aspect of senior care, senior issues. Today we're talking about long-term care options for people who feel like they just are at the point in their lives where they need a little more help than they can do for themselves. So what are your options there? That's what we're talking about today. And we've been talking so far about assisted living, about some of the gradations of care you can receive in a situation like that, depending on what you need, memory care facilities in which somebody who has memory issues, either caused by dementia or Alzheimer's or other medical issues, can get more specialized care. And then we've just been talking about adult foster or family care homes where you live in someone's home, like a house on a street in a neighborhood that has been specially designated with people who are trained to help seniors age in place, kind of. It's almost like being in your home, but you've just got, so you have that homey atmosphere, if that's something.
With
that
roommates. Is.
With roommates, yeah. Now, the other option here is another one, which is the one that it seems like a lot of people would prefer, which is to age in place in their own home, and that brings in the topic of caregivers. So, Suzanne, why don't we start with you on this one? So, how does somebody go about finding a caregiver for their elderly family member, or maybe finding one for themselves?
Yeah, there's different options, of course, people have doing that. They can hire a caregiving agency, or they can go to the state registry and look for somebody there and interview people on their own. And then another one that I suggest is if you know of somebody, a family, a friend, you go to your church, you just talk to the people that you know around you, somebody might know somebody who is a caregiver. So that's kind of a broad way of your caregiving options. And then to get more specific, if you go with an agency, those are quite nice because they do basically, they'll talk to you, see what your needs are, and then they'll match somebody up from their agency and they'll track the hours for you. They'll find out what kind of schedule you'll want. And if their caregiver ends up being ill, maybe they'll have somebody that can fill in, but not always, but sometimes that works out good. The other option is in Oregon, and I'm assuming Washington's the same, there's a registry of caregivers. And so we have one here, and these are licensed caregivers. A lot of times they'll work under Medicaid, but sometimes they'll pick up private jobs as well. And what I recommend when people go to that, you can place your own ad looking for a caregiver, or you can put in certain demographics and what you're looking for, and it will pull up a list. And they can simply call people on that list and do their own interviewing. And if people want help with that, they can always, you know, call our agency as well. We have resources and information of things to think about, boundaries, schedules. What kind of interview questions can you ask for resources? And you can. And so we can sometimes help people and facilitate them in that. Not help them hire someone. We're not going to do that part of it. But basically, we can give you the resources or things to think about so to keep yourself safe. And the one thing important to know that if you are bringing a caregiver into your home, it is important to understand the boundaries and what you're looking for, what you expect, have that written out and make sure you have clear guidelines. So if you don't want them in your home anymore, you feel comfortable enough to let them go. A nice thing about the agency, if you happen to get a caregiver that maybe you don't like, you don't get along with, you can simply call the agency and say, yeah, don't bring them back. I didn't get a good feel for them. But the nice thing, too, about the agency is they can kind of do that for you. After they get to know you, they see your home, they see what you need, things like that. So there are those options. And then some people hire friends and family members, or friends of friends. And again, just like you're hiring somebody, you need to make sure you have those clear boundaries and put those safety checks that are important to you in place. And sometimes you may not think of them all, and again, that's when you can contact our agencies and we can say, well, keep these aspects in mind.
Well, you know, I think one of the things we've talked about this before in previous shows, the issue of trust always comes up, that it's a big deal to invite a stranger into your home. So I know, Doug, when we've talked about this before, you've said that the issue that people need to be in mind that they are the employer, right, in this
case? Yes. I think that's the when Suzanne was talking about boundaries, I think that's one of the things that happens. Oftentimes, if you have a friend or you advertise and somebody comes into your home and there are no boundaries, pretty soon you're more friends. You know, the caregiver might start calling the senior woman grandma or auntie or something like that. And, oh, that's sweet. That's not. Well, then those boundaries are just so blurred. The thing that they have to remember is that person in your home is actually working for you. That you may like them, you may become friends, but you're their employer. And that makes those boundaries more clear. So if they aren't meeting the expectation, it's not like, oh, I've got to tell my granddaughter now that she's not doing her job. You say, well, remember when I first hired you, we talked about these issues, and we need to make sure that we stay on track with that. That way it's very clear, I'm the employer. We can be friends, but I'm the employer and you're the employee. And that's where that keeps the boundaries fairly straight.
And if you know yourself or your family member and they're just not the type of person that's comfortable being upfront and bringing those sorts of things up, because there's a lot of people out there that do not feel comfortable saying that, that would be a great example of, okay, maybe you should consider an agency.
Right.
Because then you can call the agency and throw your concerns at them, and they can handle that with the particular worker, or bring another worker in, and you don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, am I going to see them again?
Right.
And I think it becomes a bigger probably issue, maybe not, being in our smaller towns here, and you're afraid you're going to see them again, or you don't want to offend them, or you know their relatives and things like that. So sometimes, yeah, if you just know the type of person you are and you're not going to be able to be a critique of people, or be able to stick up for it, or tell someone, no, you're not doing that how I would like you to, then, yeah, consider that agency.
Good point.
Well, you know, when we've talked about this in the past, we always sort of are doing a lot of these caveats of protect yourself against the bad people who might steal from your relative. But I just want to just share really briefly a really good story about in my life with my father. I mean, one of my dad's caregivers is in the building right now. That's Albert Smith. He's doing a show on Friday. He and his wife are my dad's caregivers. And they, so this is how it could start out this way for you. His wife, among the many things that she does, she cleans houses for people. And I needed somebody to clean my dad's house. And she ended up, somebody said, why don't you ask Lena? And she came over and cleaned his house. And then she started noticing that he needed more help. And she asked, you know, do you mind if I do this for him? And then one day her husband came over and met my dad. And they love him and he loves them. And it's like we have holidays together. We have Thanksgiving dinner together. And my dad has developed a friendship with Albert that is a great thing in his life at this time, because he mostly sees me, his daughter, and I'm always like, did I do this? Did I do that? Prescriptions, groceries.
You got your checklist.
Blah, 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 blah. You know, but with, you know, they have, he at 97 years old, he has a friend who is
I'm so
friend.
Glad that you brought up, you know, that example, because that's something when I'm talking to families for their options, we do options counseling where we talk about exactly this, care options, what's appropriate for you, things like that. And that's one thing where they'll say, oh, I don't know anybody to help my father out, my mother out. Well, think outside the box. Talk to your coworkers if you're comfortable doing that. Be open, because you never know that they might know somebody, or like the housekeeping, and one thing leads to another. And these are people that you trust and you know their background and all of that. So it's really important to keep your options open and really kind of think that way.
And so, I mean, it can turn out to be a really wonderful situation.
Oh,
absolutely. Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, the Albert and Lena are two of the most wonderful people on the planet, and I certainly would have been locked up long ago and be in some sort of facility myself without them, because they have just been. So, I mean, it can turn out really well.
She's going to get a lot of phone calls now.
Well, it's really important to get those stories out there. Because all that the news media really concentrates on all the horrible situations that occur.
Sure.
You know, someone was taking advantage of someone else. Someone stole everything from someone else. Someone neglected someone else.
And then they get afraid to even bring anybody in their home, and there might be a really high need or a great person out there.
Yeah, and we need the success stories.
Right. And so really it's for my father, who lives far from other family besides me, it's created a situation where he has a community of people who care about him other than just his daughter. You know? So, and I think it's so great that he has different relationships with each of them that are different from my relationship with him, and it enriches his life. And that's
absolutely.
A really great thing, and it enriches all of our lives.
Everyone
you know?
Benefits.
Yeah, so that's a lovely story that I feel so fortunate. But I mean, it can happen, and it probably does happen all around. We just don't hear about those.
Does.
We hear about about the bad ones.
The majority.
I think we just get really concerned. We want to make sure people protect and think of their rights and all of that. We're just so like, oh, let's protect people. But, you know, and we forget that, it is really important to make sure you give those success stories. Because simply, if it wasn't working out, we wouldn't have these agencies. We wouldn't
That's
have
true.
Caregivers, you know. But these agencies and caregiving lists and they run successfully. If not, we need more of them. There is definitely a need for more type of caregivers in our communities, because it does work.
Well, we are getting to the point where we should do some contact information. So if you've been listening to us and you maybe have a need in your family, or for yourself, or for a family member or a friend. If you don't remember anything else about what we said on the show, remember what these folks are about to tell you, because you can call them in Washington. You can call Northwest Senior and Disability Services, and in Washington, the Olympic Area Agency on Aging, and they can tell you where to go. They can help you get started on this path of finding the right situation for you for long-term care. So, Suzanne, tell us the contact info for your agency.
Okay, for more information, any questions or anything like that, you can contact our ADRC Information and Assistance at 503-861-4210. And they have a plethora of information and resources at the tip of their hands right there. And then we also have our website at www.nwsds.org.
And that's Northwest Senior and Disability Services, which you can Google if you're driving and you can't write down the URL or any of that stuff. Oregon, it's Northwest Senior and Disability Services.
Yes.
So, Doug, or Washington.
Well, we have two offices in Pacific County. In Long Beach, it's 360-642-3634. In Raymond, in North Pacific County, it's 360-942-2177. And our website is www.o3a.org. And that's the number 3.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. Every month we come to you and talk about senior issues. I've been on the air today with Suzanne Bjerrenson from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Have a good holiday. We'll see you next month.